Biggs.
With Mully and Haw.
Biggs time.
The Biggs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check him out, Aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, we're celebrating the glorious victory for your Chicago Bears. I don't know how glorious it was, but they needed that victory. They had lost two in a row, and now all of a sudden they're off to their best start in the Matt Eberflus era at 2-2.
Had to have that victory. And, I'm not going to sit here and call a week four game in late September a must win, because I think that's a little bit disingenuous. And, we tend to get caught up in the moment much too much and overstate things, because it sounds important and grandiose and great. But the reality is a 1-3 start is generally a harbinger of a lot of bad football to come. Since the league expanded to a 14-team playoff system in 2021, so over the last 3 years, teams that begin the year 1-3 are 12% to make the playoffs. It's like three for 25 rebound to make the playoffs, and I think another maybe four. I don't have it in front of me right now. Rebound to have a winning record, fall short of the playoffs. So to get to 2-2, to avoid that 1-3 pitfall where you're a minimum of 2 weeks away from getting even again, I think was significant.
All right, Brad, from an offensive perspective, after the long week they endured, what was the biggest source of progress in your mind?
Well, they get some balance offensively, being able to run the football and have some success running it. Now, listen, that's a bad Rams run defense, just like the Colts defense they encountered the previous week was bad, but they got the job done. They were able to have balance. You talk about having 28 carries, 23 pass attempts, DeAndre Swift going for 93 yards, finally getting that big hole on the inside zone and the 36-yard touchdown. I think you saw his ability as a home run hitter, which is what they called him when they signed him in free agency and paid him an awful lot of money. So I think them being able to achieve some success on the ground and by doing so become balanced is easily the biggest takeaway. And they've got another bad run defense coming up this week in the Carolina Panthers. You couldn't have sat there back in the spring and handpicked a better start to the schedule for them, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, Big Z, we were talking about it this morning. You think about their schedule, and I get it. You know, it will turn when you get to division play, but that's well down the road. This is an opportunity to build some momentum. You know, I know the Red Rifle will be out there on Sunday, but that's a winnable game. And then you go to London, and that's a winnable game. You got the bye week. I'm just saying it sets up for momentum, for confidence, for all the things we talk about in a good football season.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a chance for some growth, and guys can learn through some mistakes and hopefully be playing better football when that slate of division games, which is, it's interesting, you know, they don't have these division games early on. They're all sort of packed in the back half of the schedule. Be playing better football at that point in time, because Carolina this week, then a currently winless Jacksonville team over in London, the, the bye, a trip to the Commanders, then a trip to, I want to say, Arizona. And then I think the Patriots are in the mix for Matt Eberflus's team. So opportunity to get some momentum. But, hey, listen, they're not good enough at this point to do anything but look at what's right in front of them. And that's a Carolina team that's going to visit on Sunday.
Two of the most impressive plays to me, or at least memorable, were the ones that Doug Kramer lined up at fullback, because it was a declaration that we're going to do this, try to stop this, and the Rams couldn't. So all the things that we were clamoring for throughout a week of consternation with the offense, they just lined up the mini fridge and let him go. What was the genesis of that idea, Brad? What'd you find out about it, and how did Doug Kramer adapt to life as a fullback?
Yeah, Doug said, you know, it's something that they've had in previously, maybe involving some different offensive linemen. He was happy to do it. Wasn't sure the opportunity was going to pop up this week. I kind of joked with him about maybe getting the ball in his hands, but he said he's just worried about blocking someone and kind of more focused on being a center. But, hey, they had – It looked like they'd done it before, right? Sometimes you see that big body in the backfield, and you're like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. This guy ought to be able to open up a hole, and it doesn't happen. The guy doesn't run with good pad level, maybe doesn't know where he's going, uses poor footwork, all of those things. Like sometimes it just looks really bad when teams do that. Well, you know, Doug had his hand in the dirt, kept his pad level down, got moving forward, and I think Roshan almost fell on his back in the end zone, and then he executed, I thought, a decent block to keep the edge defender out of there on the third and one when they used it a second time, which I believe that was for a 3-yard gain for Roshan. So sort of a natural fit, maybe, because Doug said on the freshman team at Hinsdale Central, many years ago, they moved him around a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit, including into the backfield.
Yeah, I thought it was great, and I really enjoyed it, but I hope that they're not going to hand the ball to him or try to throw the ball to him. You know what I mean? Like, I like a gimmick a certain amount, but let him prove his metal blocking, and maybe he'll end up as the starting center before it's all over. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, you know, didn't Matt Nagy have, like, those lineman touchdowns in consecutive weeks in 2018? That's when everything was cooking for the Bears. Everything was looking up back then, and they're trying to get back there. They had to win this, you know, because it's a really well-coached Rams team, but, man, are they shorthanded. Like, I knew they were shorthanded coming in. Then you watch them, and slow linebackers. Cats you haven't heard of that Stafford's throwing the ball to, some of them anyway. They've used three starting left tackles this season, three starting left guards this season. The two centers, the current one, is the rookie sixth-round pick. So the way that's set up, they had to get a win here.
So speaking of offensive lines in disarray, Tevin Jenkins with the rib injury leaves. Matt Pryor moves over to the left guard. Nate Davis goes into right guard. Brad, overall, how would you evaluate the play of the offensive line, and what can we expect moving forward?
Well, I think you're going to expect teams to continue to try to bull rush them. And you saw them have some issues with that when the pocket started to condense on Caleb Williams. It was, there were power rushes. I thought Jared Verse gave some problems to Braxton Jones in that regard. And that I would think that opponents look at that as a way to kind of keep Caleb in the pocket. They don't want to let him extend plays and make some of those second reaction throws that he can turn into highlight plays. But I thought the line was okay. Yeah, you got an issue with Tevin being out, more moving parts. I would guess that after the bye week is when you'll probably start hearing talk about a potential return from the IR for Ryan Bates and Larry Borum, so they'd have some more options. But way before we get there, you got to hopefully get an understanding for what's going on with Tevin, who had started the first four games of the season for the first time in his career, right? That the availability has been a storyline for him, and everything was looking good. And then it was on that first zone read keeper that Caleb had, which that's a big play, right? Fake the handoff, keep it, zip around end, and slide down. Protect yourself. 7-yard gain. That's the kind of thing that will help their running game as a whole, because defenses are going to have to realize that, hey, we're going to have to honor this. This guy's athletic enough to hurt us, and it's on tape now. So I think that was big. But on the backside of that play, Tevin's engaged with this outside linebacker, and it kind of looks like he falls. And so it's a rib injury, and maybe we'll get a little more information today, but it might not be till Wednesday.
We talked a little bit about the punter, about the game that he had,
how
he controlled field position. And, you know, you use a fourth-round pick on a guy, you want to see that kind of game, right? And that was a really good game.
Yeah, one of the interesting things, when I talked to LeVar Woods, the Iowa Hawkeyes special teams coordinator back, I think it was during the Senior Bowl, I actually had a conversation with him, and I've known LeVar for a long time. He said one of the things that Torrey was really going to have to focus on when he made that adjustment to the NFL was consistency with tight spirals, that, you know, super strong leg could get all the hang time you could ever desire as a special teams coach, and the ball placement and things of that nature. But you know, one thing that maybe needed to be tightened up was the consistency with those spiral kicks. And man, did he nail it with that 66-yarder, just crushed it. And you guys have probably heard the same thing I have. Well, fourth-round pick, why didn't they take an offensive lineman? Why didn't they get an edge rusher? Well, those are lotto picks for those positions at that point in the draft. And no one can deny the needs that they've got at those positions, but you could also take the 122nd pick, get a punter, and feel like, you know what, we might have one of the very best ones in the league here in no time at all, that this guy's that talented. And now you see why they call him a weapon. Like that 66-yarder goes out of bounds at the 8. Then he hits another one as high as you can hit a ball at Soldier Field, as high as I've seen a ball go, and comes down at the 8, but not just touches at the 8. It's the crazy ability he has to control it. It's almost like he's got the thing attached to a drone. And so it's not going for a touchback. The Rams are backed up in their own end. They get they get Darrell Taylor matched up on the left guard. He pulls a spin move. All of a sudden, he's in Matthew Stafford's lap. Ball comes out, and it's an easy pick for Jaquan Brisker. Game over.
This segment with Brad Biggs, sponsored by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency, call the plumbing professionals. Available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. All right, Brad, where are you with the communication between Caleb Williams and everybody else? We saw maybe with DJ Moore, wasn't quite there at the pass at the end of the first half. Could have been a touchdown, but there was a little miscommunication DJ Moore alluded to earlier in the show. Then you wonder about the 5 pre-snap penalties. How much of that was adjusting to a different cadence? Who's in charge and who's to blame there? Because those are too many. You can't have that kind of sloppiness. How about communication issues?
Yeah, well, communication was the word that everyone wanted to use in the building this past week, right? From coach to player and player to coach. And it seems like they were able to make some legitimate strides forward. If they try to make that their buzzword every week, I think that's probably going to grow a little old. And it might not work. I don't think they can lean on a come-to-Jesus meeting with the play caller very often and that be productive. I mean, you guys have been around. Normally, when you hear about this you know, leadership council or players only meeting or something like that. And it's early in the season, and prepping for week four is early in the season. Like, that sounds great. And I think people love to hear that. And I think a lot of times it's a sign of, oh boy, there are some rocky times ahead. But if Sunday's performance is a clue to what we might get, maybe this is this goes more the other direction, and they can get some things straightened out. But yeah, the pre-snap penalties, they've just had way too many. And if you could just single out one guy and say, well, shoot, they've got 11 of them and he's got six or something, that would be delightful. But that's not the case. They've all kind of taken turns doing that. And yeah, in terms of the passing game with DJ, shoot, none of the wide receivers really were getting the ball downfield yesterday. The passing game still looks a little disjointed, and you're concerned about the protection, right? And that probably goes into it as well. But if they can continue to have success running the ball, and they don't have to be monsters on the ground, but just where they're able to be balanced, I think that's going to hopefully speed up some of the advancements in the passing game, because they're just going to be able to keep opponents on their heels a little bit more by being balanced.
This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years, estwing.com. Difficult to pick between the positions, but who had the bigger game, Taylor or Swift?
Oh, boy. I don't listen to that crap, man.
But you meaning the music or Mully?
That's a sincere question. It was a big Swift game.
That's a good question.
What is wrong with you?
That's a good question.
Well, Daryl Taylor had a pretty good game too, right? Like, Flus, I'll tell you what, Flus loves that guy. Like, Flus just gushes when he talks about Daryl Taylor and kind of that energy that he's got. You see it on the field, and what Flus will tell you is that it's there on the practice field too. It's in the meeting room. Like, this is a guy who arrived after final cutdowns via trade, and sometimes you see a player get into a new spot and he's just kind of trying to find his way and learn who people are, and it's just real kind of cautious. And Daryl just comes in, and Daryl's going to be who Daryl is. And he's embraced it. They've embraced it. He's got, what, two sacks, I think three quarterback hits through the four games. But something to just keep an eye on, and I don't want to dwell on it, but the run defense that was top-ranked in the league last year, guys, they're 17th right now going into you got a doubleheader of Monday Night Football this evening. They're 17th, giving up about I don't have it in front of me. I want to say it's about a .120 a game. And so, you know, that's something that I'm sure Eberflus wants to get ironed out a little bit, because Jonathan Taylor had 110 of Indianapolis's 150 yards on the ground last week, and Kyren Williams got to, what, 94 yesterday with L.A. averaging about 4.6 a pop. So just something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Why is that?
Well, I'll tell you what, their backups have not played well against the run, in my opinion. Okay. Like, these guys that they're playing in waves have struggled at it. You know, same personnel for the most part as a year ago, same scheme. Who's out? Well, Justin Jones is out, and he kind of played the three technique for them as a guy who was probably miscast and is more of a nose tackle. So when Jones was on the field last year, next to Andrew Billings, you basically had two nose guards in the middle there, and that's tough to run against. Now, they weren't getting the push in the middle, the interior pass rush that they desired, and Javon Dexter has really looked good, tied for the league lead among defensive tackles with three sacks. He's getting pressures. He's got win rate. You like all that. But the run defense needs to be a little bit better.
Fair enough. Thank you, Biggsy. We appreciate it.
Good stuff, Brad.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune.
I think he's trying to say that Matt Eberflus thinks of Daryl Taylor that he is all that in a bag of chips.
Wow. I'm surprised he didn't talk more about Swift.
Oh, he doesn't want to go there.
Yeah.
That's pop culture. Biggsy stays away from that stuff.
No, I mean DeAndre Swift.
Oh, what do you DeAndre
think I'm
Swift.
Talking about? What are you doing?
Yeah, well, DeAndre Swift, first running back for the Bears to have 70 or more rushing yards, 70 or more receiving yards since Jeremy Langford in 2015.
Yeah, Michigan State, Jeremy Langford?
Yes, fourth round draft pick.
I remember him. I honestly, it would take me about 10 other players before I got
him. We overrated him for at least 2 years.
Yeah.
Right now, be the sixth caller to the Scores Contest line, 312-540-0670, and you can win a $120 gift card for the, wait for it, Jumanji VR experience, the Jumanji virtual reality experience at Wonderverse in Oak Brook.
Yes.
312-540-0670.
I believe the pregame show, postgame show, going to Wonderverse in Oak Brook next weekend.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately not allowed out of my house, but I believe.
So you're not going to the Wonderverse?
I don't believe I'm allowed. I'm pretty sure they.
You'll be
sure
there I'm virtually.
No, I'm not allowed in public, as you know.
Okay.
But what a pity. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. But who had the bigger game, Taylor or Swift?
Oh, boy. I don't listen to that crap, man.
And Tommy Hottovy is going to go to the mound to buy a little time, perhaps, for Miller. All of his teammates are coming around him. And I think this might be it for Kyle Hendricks. He is getting a hug from Tommy Hottovy, and the fans now realize Kyle is going to walk away, and when he does, I'm just going to let you hear the crowd and the thunderous ovation, and here it comes.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670, The Score. That is the Great Clip of the Week. It's brought to you by Great Clips. Go to Great Clips for your next haircut. It's going to be great. And 83 is where the Cubs finished. 83 victories.
83.
By most accounts, the...
Disappointing season.
Well, the 83.5 was the over-under for the year, so it's an under.
Yeah, I don't know about Vegas, but in Chicago, disappointing season. And that was a special moment, though. Tommy Hottovy was coaxed into going to the mound, and Craig Counsell let him remove Kyle Hendricks with one out in the eighth. Great moment at Wrigley Field for the professor, who deserves all the praise, as Pat Hughes said so eloquently. And Tommy Hottovy was asked afterward about it, and he said, you know, he didn't know what he was doing. That wasn't really planned. They planned on taking Hendricks out, but not him being the one doing it. Just a good moment. But from the Cubs' perspective, that was probably the last good moment. They lost on Sunday. 83 victories means that they weren't good enough to get in the playoffs, and that's all that's all that it's about for a team that has not won a playoff game since 2017.
We should let you know you're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday. It's presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. And want to remind you to stay tuned, because at 10 o'clock we will have the debut of Bernstein and Harris here on the Score. Dan Bernstein and Marshall Harris will continue the reaction to the Bears game. They'll be joined by Anthony Herron at 11. Sure, he knows a lot about Tory Taylor and Dan Wiederer at noon. That was a reference to Iowa football.
Yeah, it was. Thanks. And a good one.
What did you think of the White Sox? I don't know if everyone is aware, but the White Sox ended up winning 5 of their last 6 games of the year. So while they did lose 121 games, which is the worst ever in the history of Major League Baseball, they did win 41 games. So that win total, 41 and 121, that would be a .253 winning percentage, and the Mets at 40-120 before the extra couple games, they still have a .250 win percentage. So technically, Sox with the better season.
Nah, yeah, that's funny. technicality. It's a forgettable year, but you can't really forget it because it made history the wrong kind of history.
Oh, yeah.
Winning 5 out of 6 says that they fought to the end. They were competitive. They took pride in their work, whatever you want to say. But Friday night in Detroit was the 121st loss, and it was just difficult to watch A.J. Hinch, the manager they wanted to hire, celebrate with Jason Benetti in the clubhouse. For certain Sox fans, they looked at that as two guys that they wished were still in Chicago or wished they were in Chicago trying to, you know, win a division in a division that's just gotten tougher than ever. Molly, look at the playoffs, which start tomorrow. The Royals, the Guardians, and the Tigers are all in the playoffs. The Twins aren't because they had a colossal choke job. But those four teams, the gap between Chicago and the South Side, the White Sox, and those other four teams, much more than the city and the distance between those four cities.
Well, hold on a second, because you're forgetting, that the chairman, Jerry Reinsdorf, had a letter to the fans that was released yesterday, and everything's going to be okay.
He did release a letter to the fans. I wonder if he will make himself available to questions, as he suggested he would, when they hire a manager, when they get to the point where they're looking ahead. The letter was full of an explanation and an apology.
Full of what?
An explanation. Oh. It said there were no excuses. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to show it. And now the White Sox, who we have no reason to believe are going to be active in free agency, need to spend like they mean what Jerry Reinsdorf said. If they are going to be competitive again, they're going to start that path back. I think that they need to show it, whether that means pursuing free agents that could help immediately, extending Garrett Crochet instead of trading him. Whatever the case is, they need to show it more than say it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I did not read that letter. I did read the letter, but I didn't read it as in lieu of a media session. Here's the letter. I think that Jerry still needs to face the media, needs to face some hard questions, and needs to answer for what happened this year.
Well, I hope so.
I hope it's not. I hope that statement, that letter, isn't misinterpreted as somehow his no longer needing to talk to the public.
I don't think it should.
I agree.
And I don't think it can. And if you look at the letter specifically, it states to the fans.
Yes.
So when Jerry Reinsdorf wants to speak to the fans, I think he has every right to, as a chairman, to release a statement. And these are his words and his vow or whatever you want to, however you want to describe it. But what he does when you're appearing at a news conference is maybe you're talking to the fans through the media, the conduit between the fans and the newsmakers. But I think that it's a different dynamic because there are questions that he has to address and be asked. And I think you can start with the baseball direction, but you don't stop there because there's a lot going on with the 78. Yep. There's a lot going on with the related Midwest and the plan to build a ballpark in the South Loop. Those are the kinds of things that when you face questioning, you have to address or at least give people a chance to ask those questions.
I also think that he needs to go beyond an apology to the fans. There should be an apology to the game. I think that, you know, Jerry describes himself as a fan of baseball and a fan of the White Sox. If you're apologizing to Sox fans, you ought to apologize to anybody involved in Major League Baseball for the horrible season that you inflicted on your opponents, the number of victories that you gave away to people. I just think it's a real embarrassment and a real shameful situation, and it's not enough to just write to the fans and say, hey, we're going to get better.
Well, there are too many games that offended people's baseball sensibilities. Yeah. Everybody can agree on that. What happens now is that the managerial search continues in earnest. I think that Grady Sizemore will be part of that. I don't know that he will get the job. I wonder if after a season like this, you want to just purge everything in terms of the on-field product. That may not be fair to Grady Sizemore, who I think acquitted himself pretty well over the past 40 games or so. And he is a candidate, according to Chris Getz. But I do think you need experience either running a team or experience being around a winning organization.
Well, in the letter, Jerry says they're going outside the organization and that he talks about how big a hire this is. I don't know that you could just promote someone that you had fill in because you're a horrible manager that helped you lose all those games in a row because you wanted to prove something and stay with him. And then you come up a game short. I just don't know that that's the answer.
I don't either. Let's be honest here.
And I'm not picking on him.
I look at the manager's role in next season's success or failure as being a small part of the equation.
Exactly.
It's a very small part of it. Look, let's go back to what I think we said and I suggested back when the job became available. You have an opportunity here as a White Sox front office ownership group to chart the course for climbing out of this pit you've dug for yourself. Mm-hmm. This is a true rebuild. And Kim Eng is available. I don't know if she's interested, but she's an executive that you could bring in if you want to add to your front office, as that letter suggests they will. Also, Skip Schumacher is the reigning National League Manager of the Year. He just got fired because they have contractual difficulties or disagreement down in Florida. That would be a good conversation, at least to start. Now, you don't stop there. You want to know if people with experience would come to Chicago, work for what you would pay them, which my guess is not be as much as some other places, and take over a job that is immense in terms of a rebuild. I don't know who you're going to get that's qualified that fits the criteria, but you could at least ask, and these are the conversations they need to have.
And maybe improve the plane so they don't have to sit and coach. I don't know. I'm just wondering what they're going to do. But, yeah, they ended 41-121.
This is definitely an organization in need of an overhaul.
Yes.
Every aspect of it.
Yes.
And I think that Jeff, you're suggesting with the team plane was the metaphor used by Ken Rosenthal and Brittany Garoli, I believe, from The Athletic. And it was a terrific way to start a story about all of the things that are wrong with the White Sox and how they have let this slide and lapse into the point where they are now. They presided over the worst season in Major League history. I don't care about the Mets winning percentage. This was the worst season in Major League history.
The Mets and the Braves have a doubleheader today. And it's real simple. One win by the Mets or one win by the Braves, they're in the playoffs. The Diamondbacks need one team to sweep in order for them to make the playoffs. What's interesting is that I believe Chris Sale is scheduled to pitch the second game. I would imagine, David, if Atlanta wins the first game, you're going to save Chris Sale for the playoffs.
Yes.
I don't think there'd
there's
be
really
any doubt
no
about
doubt.
That. None.
And nobody should question the baseball integrity of the game. You are the Atlanta Braves.
Yes.
You've got one obligation, to try to win as many playoff games, go as deep in the postseason as possible.
Yes.
Saving Chris Sale for game one is job one.
If indeed you win the first game, there would be no need to start Chris Sale because why would you care
You're
what
in.
Happens with Arizona? You're in.
Who
I
cares?
Agree. No, you care about winning a playoff game, and you're more likely to do so with Chris Sale than not. So, yeah, integrity of the game.
You have it. The integrity of the game is not inconsequential or not unimportant, but your obligation to your own fan base and the players in that clubhouse and your organization is greater than that.
All right, let's squeeze in Frank. Frank has waited in Darien. Hey, Frank.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Good
morning.
I have two observations. I don't know if you guys remember the play, but it was in the first half. It was like 3rd and 5. Komet was in the backfield. You had Tripp to the right. You had DJ Moore on the left. Before the ball was snapped, the linebacker's already heading over to the flat. And then they throw the little screen pass, typical pass from Waldron over there. Komet was lucky to get a couple yards. And then my next one was, how come we always throw outside the numbers? Yesterday, what's his name? I can't think of his name now, but all he threw was over the middle. They made so many catches over the middle.
Stafford?
The Rams did.
Yeah.
But Stafford.
Yes.
And we don't have any scheme of any. We got great wide receivers. Why are we not having over the middle passes? I just want to see what you guys thought.
It's a good question. I think that's a neglected spot in the zone, the intermediate passing zone, Mully, that Caleb Williams and the Bears receiving corps have not yet exploited or taken advantage of. I don't recall the play that he's referring to, but Shane Waldron did overall a better job of scheming the Bears to success yesterday. The mismatch on the DJ Moore touchdown is something we can't overlook. You know, if we're going to blame him for things when they go wrong, you have to credit him when things go right, and that was a nice way to line up DJ Moore against a linebacker and then to put it where it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good pass on Caleb Williams, but a good design by Waldron.
All right, we've got the big moment is upon us. It's going to – what are you laughing at? It's Dan Bernstein and Marshall Harris.
This it's a big moment.
I just said that.
I know. We know that it is great. It's just the official start.
Thank you.
Marshall's not exactly new to these hallways or the studio.
I love Marshall.
He is a great addition to this staff and this team. Totally. He's tremendous in every way, so we look forward to welcoming him next.
But we scoff when Mully tries to present it. No, we'll talk to them next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.